teenagers. Interesting lot. And tonight, Dr. Kirsty Whitaker, who's a postdoctoral researcher in the brain mapping unit at the Department of Psychiatry, at the University of Cambridge, will explore the changes their brains go through during adolescence. I'm pleased to say that Dr. Kirsty is on the line now. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Hi.
Thank you, Kirsty, for joining us. I wonder if we could start off with the teenager itself. Are the humans unique in having the teenager in the first place?
I think that's a really interesting question. I don't think that they are unique in having a period of adolescence, but they are probably they probably have the longest and most complex definition of being a teenager. I mean, obviously, we call people teenagers when they are between 13 and 19 years old. But actually, if you look at a biological definition of adolescence, it ends when you have reached kind of full standing in society and you can sort of live completely independently. And I am 34 years old and I'm not completely confident that I have reached that just yet. So the sort of the definition of a teenager according to the age that you are is not really, doesn't really match up with our biological understanding of adolescence, which is this kind of period of change and development and being able to learn so many new skills that sets you up for adulthood.
And I guess the teen numbers are kind of like a handy way to bracket it really as much as anything else, because different people will develop into teenagers, the teenage characteristics at different points in their life.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And is there any evidence, because it's been suggested that teenagers are, if you like, becoming teenagers, reaching puberty sooner than was the case in previous years?
I am not super sure if that's true. If you go back a long way, like a century, 100 years or so, we used to marry off children, what we would now call children, much younger. So I'm not super sure that it's necessarily the case that everyone is sort of developing much faster. Mm. It's probably the case, though, that because of the internet, because of having smartphones and things like that, younger people have more access to information, which possibly sort of, it may feel to the older generation, and by that I mean their parents, that they are sort of going through these processes. But I'm not sure that we actually have any evidence that sort of biologically they're going any quicker.
How much research has been done into teenagers and the experiences that they go through?
Did you say how much experience?
How much research has been carried out?
So, some, but I would probably argue not enough. So I'm a member of the Neuroscience and Psychiatry Network, which is a collaboration between the University of Cambridge and University College London. And we're really interested in trying to understand the age range between 14 and 24. And the reason that we chose that age range is because it's very likely that teenagers in their late teens, around about sort of 17, 18, have their first episodes of depression or their first episodes of psychosis, which is related to a diagnosis of schizophrenia. And although there's been quite a lot of work looking at adults with those mental health disorders, there's not been so much of a focus on the developmental aspect and how people sort of have those first episodes.
Mm-hmm. And are we separating those episodes from the, if you like, the traditional classic teenage mood swing when everybody, you know, when they walk around in the grump and just answer whatever to everything? That's separate, is it, from the possibility of developing mental illness both as a teenager and indeed in later life?
So, yes, definitely teenagers
Oh, Kirsty, we experience a bit of a wobbly phone line at the moment. I'm not entirely sure. If you move to the left, move back, move to the right again, and we'll see if that makes it better.
Is that any better?
It does seem a bit better. Yes, yeah, stay where you are. Don't move far. So we were talking before you went all Dalekified on us about the mental illnesses, and if you like, the average teenage mood swing is separate from the possibility of mental illness in later life.
Yes. So what I was saying is that you don't have to worry about having a moody teenager. That's sort of quite a kind of natural, if you like, side effect of transitioning from being a child to being an adult. You know, if you're a child, your parents kind of control everything about you. You don't really have to make too many life decisions. You just sort of follow along. You go to school. Everything's quite rigid. And as an adult, you have to be able to work with uncertainty. And so the process through which teenagers kind of figure out how they are going to be adults, that can lead to them sort of having challenges with their parents or having, and they also have a lot of hormones, obviously, sort of coursing around, which we talk about, and that can lead to mood swings. And those are just totally normal, typical development. They are part of the process of growing up. People who are at risk of mental health disorders are more vulnerable, although it is still, I don't think we know exactly what makes someone vulnerable to a lifelong mental health disorder. And I don't think that we're very good at pinpointing people and identifying them for extra support. And that's something that we're looking into researching here in Cambridge.
So just because somebody has some mental issues during their teenage years, that doesn't necessarily mean then that they then go on to have them for the rest of their life. It can, I don't know, I guess it might depend on the person.
I think that's exactly right. It will very much depend on the person. It will depend on the nature of their symptoms and whether they are, whether it's sort of just typical teenage growing up or whether it's something that is more sort of intransigent and difficult to kind of, for them individually to get a hold on. And I think the answer is always to reach out to your GP and ask for any specialist help if you think you need it. You can consider mental health disorders to be cured if they are managed really well. And one of the things that I would really sort of love to encourage people to recognize is that don't let it get so bad before you ask for any help. There's some evidence from neuroscience that the more times you have a depressive episode or a psychotic episode or an anxious panic attack, the more likely you are to have those in the future. And so finding help as early as possible can actually stave off future problems as you get older.
And Kezda, you'll be speaking tonight as part of the wonderful Cambridge Science Festival, which is into, I think, its second week now. And these are presumably some of the topics you'll be bringing up in your talk.
Yes. So I'm a neuroscientist by training, so I'm going to fill my talk with as many beautiful pictures of brain images as I can. Quite a lot of them are of my brain, and you know, I think it looks particularly stylish. But I'll be talking about what we can use magnetic resonance imaging, MRI scans for, and how we're pulling that information together with other information from our participants in the Cambridgeshire area to understand more about typical development.
Because brain technology, I guess, we were, funnily enough, we were just chatting in the studio because Leah had come in from next door to take a photograph of a guest she was interviewing. We're talking about the developments in the iPhone, for example, and other similar handheld devices. I guess if you put that into the type of technology that is taking images through an MRI scan, that must give you so much more detail to play with as a scientist.
Yep, exactly. So I'm just starting a five-year fellowship at the Alan Turing Institute, which is down in London, and it's a data science hub. And one of the things that we're very excited about exploring is taking all of the information that we can get from these beautiful 3D images and looking to see if we can kind of understand even more about the brain than we traditionally have been able to.
Okay, well, Kirsty, thank you very much for your time. Is there still room, do you know, at your session this afternoon or this evening?
So it says on the website that there are limited tickets available at the door, and it's at 6 p.m. at the Mill Lane Lecture Theatres.
Okay, well, formerly Orderly Queue outside the Mill Lane Lecture Theatre. Kirsty, thank you very much for your time, for speaking to Cambridge 105 this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's Dr. Kirsty Whittaker, and she is a researcher in the Brain Mapping Unit of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Cambridge. And as you heard there, she'll be doing that talk tonight, which is on Mill Lane. Just search for the Cambridge Science Festival. I thoroughly recommend you to go down and try out a few of those, a few days left on that.